Okay, well, good afternoon. Just before I get started, no disclosures. Yeah, I'm going to spend a bit of time on background before getting to the study that is the title of this slide. My perspective is that of a person who's worked in a state or local health department collecting surveillance data. Data collected by health departments is usually population-based, and the general purpose of public health surveillance data is to get a broad picture of specific health problems. We attempt to gauge the magnitude of a health problem, determine risk factors for that problem, what groups are most at risk, and to monitor trends over time, hopefully in the context of intervention efforts. In the context of this particular session, we're now moving to data that reflects the whole population and, from the social determinant perspective, neighborhoods within it. Well, influenza is a disease of major public health importance. It causes an annual epidemic in the U.S. that results in an estimated 4,900 to 27,000 deaths and 114,000 to 624,000 hospitalizations. Periodically, totally new strains emerge and cause pandemics, usually with much greater morbidity and mortality than the annual epidemic. Although it's far from perfect, influenza vaccine can modulate annual epidemics. Currently, flu vaccine is recommended annually for all persons, at least in the United States, 6 months and older. Although vaccine is recommended for practically everyone, understanding who's at higher risk of severe influenza illness is important to annual vaccination efforts and for pandemic influenza planning. Groups known to be at higher risk include persons of any age with any of a variety of underlying conditions, pregnant women, children less than 5 years, and adults 65 and older. In addition, there may be previously unrecognized demographic groups that also experience higher rates of serious influenza-related disease. For many reportable diseases, including influenza, data on socioeconomic status, or SES, is not collected. Thus, we often don't know if SES is a determinant of these diseases. However, we usually have the street address of a person with a reportable disease, something we collect for purposes of deduplication and to enable us to contact the person. With street address, we can geocode the data, identify the census tract of residence, and then link it to census-level SES data. The census tract SES variable most commonly used, at least by the public practitioner sector, is the percent of persons below the poverty level in a census tract. We usually group census tracts with similar values to produce at least four categories: less than 5% of the residents below the poverty level, 5 to 10%, 10 to 20%, and 20 or more percent of residents, again, below the federal poverty level. No analyses using census tract poverty have been done for influenza until recently in Connecticut and Tennessee. Because of the national annual epidemic, the CDC has created and supported a national network of standardized influenza surveillance systems. One of the influenza outcomes monitored is influenza-related hospitalizations, a costly, severe outcome of influenza. The influenza-related hospitalization surveillance system is based on active surveillance for laboratory-confirmed persons with influenza admitted to the hospital. It was established between 2003 and 2005 in 10 emerging infections program states. In 2009, it was expanded to four other states and was given the name FluServNet. FluServNet covers more than 70 counties and 27 million persons in 14 states, is shown on this slide. The geographic area isn't very big, but still it does represent between 8 and 9% of the U.S. population. In 2010, the Connecticut Emerging Infections Program began several analyses of influenza-related hospitalization data using census tract poverty, the first in children less than 18 years, followed several years later by one in adults. Both found strong associations of increasing incidence of influenza-related hospitalization with increasing census tract poverty. This slide shows the main result from the first study. Case data from New Haven County, Connecticut, was combined for seven influenza seasons, including the 2009-10 pandemic influenza season. For the combined data, there was a progressive association of increasing influenza incidence with increasing census tract poverty, with a more than threefold higher risk among the greater than 20% group compared to the less than 5% group. This slide shows the incidence rate ratio, or IRR, of the highest poverty group to the lowest for each influenza season included in the study. The red dotted line is the IRR for all seasons combined. As you can see, the IRR is greater than 2 for each season and as high as 8 in 2003. For the pandemic 2009 to 10 season, the IRR was just about the same as for all years combined. This slide shows the results of a similar study in adults in New Haven County. Data were combined for 7 influenza seasons from 2005 to 2011. Overall, as with children, increasing incidence of influenza-related hospitalizations was associated with increasing census tract poverty level. Incidence in the highest poverty group was 3 times that of the lowest. This slide shows the IRR of the highest poverty group to the lowest for each influenza season in the adult study. Again, each season had an IRR of at least 2, including the pandemic 2009 to 10 influenza season. This slide shows the combined 7-season adult data stratified by the 3 major race ethnic groups in Connecticut. As you can see, the relationship of increasing incidence with increasing poverty holds for each race ethnic group and appears to be particularly strong among blacks and Hispanics. So with that background, I'd like to move on to the most recent study, the title of this presentation. Based on the results of the New Haven County studies, Connecticut made a formal proposal to the EIP Influenza Steering Group to analyze all FluServNet data using census tract level poverty. Steering Group agreed. It was decided to look at 2 influenza seasons, 2010 to 11 and 2011 to 12, as some sites had already geocoded them. Geocoding is a relevant issue as fewer than half of all states routinely geocode reportable disease data. The main objective of the study was to determine if previously found associations of higher influenza hospitalization rates in children and adults in Connecticut were true FluServNet-wide. So to create the data set, each site geocoded their own case data and identified the census tract of case residents. In some cases, it was necessary for them to obtain IRB permission to send census tract of residents to CDC. CDC then did the matching of census tract to census tract poverty level using the 2008 to 12 American Community Survey 5-year estimates. CDC then sent the line-listed case data set with census tract poverty level of each case to the Connecticut EIP for analysis. Denominator data for each census tract was obtained from the 2010 census. The combined population of all FluServNet surveillance sites was more or less equally distributed across the 4 census tract poverty categories. Overall, 96% of the more than 8,000 cases were able to be geocoded. This slide shows the age distribution of the geocoded cases, which was no different than those not geocodable. The largest age groups were adult age groups, with more than a third of cases in the 65 and older age group. This slide shows the age-adjusted hospital incidence by census tract poverty level. The combined all-site data set shows the same relationship of increasing hospitalization incidence with increasing poverty level. This slide shows the same data by each FluServNet site with a state abbreviation. Every site shows the same relationship. So this slide shows the age-adjusted incidence rate ratio of highest to lowest poverty area, again by site. The lowest IRR was 1.4 for Georgia, while Minnesota had the highest at 3.3. The overall data was age-adjusted. When we broke it down into age groups, the relationship held for each age group. The numbers in the yellow box at the top of the slide are the IRRs of the highest to lowest poverty groups, all of which are greater than one. The 65 plus age group had the lowest at 1.3, while most other age groups were higher than two. This slide shows the all-site age-adjusted data by race and ethnicity. As for New Haven County, it holds for each race ethnic group. The question inevitably arises, could the association of increasing hospitalization rate with increasing poverty reflect a lower threshold for admitting poorer people whom clinicians could not be certain they would return if discharged and things got worse? To address this, we looked at severe outcomes of hospitalization, being admitted to an intensive care unit, requiring mechanical ventilation, and death. For each outcome, we found the same relationship. Not only that, the rate among the highest poverty group compared to the lowest was approximately double for each outcome, as you can see by the IRRs shown in the yellow box at the top of the slide. Okay, well, this is the final data slide. Another question that inevitably arises with these findings is, could they be explained by relative influenza vaccination rates? Well, most sites in FluServNet don't collect county-level vaccination data, much less by census tract poverty. Thus, we looked at case vaccination rates as an index of relative vaccination. Looking at the data in this way, we did find a difference in vaccination rates with decreasing vaccination with increasing poverty. Although not shown on this slide, this difference was almost entirely found in those 50 and older, not in the younger age groups. So we feel there are three main hypotheses for the association we found. First, it's possible that those in higher poverty areas have higher rates of influenza infection and thus rates of hospitalization. We know that they live in more crowded housing conditions and could thus have a higher probability of exposure per unit time. Second, it's possible infection rates are no different between poorer and wealthier neighborhoods, but that the poor have a higher risk of severe outcomes. This would be true for groups with a higher prevalence of underlying or poorly controlled conditions, such as asthma. Our data didn't show a higher prevalence of underlying conditions with poverty, except for pregnancy, which is more common in poorer women living in poorer census tracts. But we did not have sufficient data to determine whether relative rates of asthma or other chronic disease control were different between sites or poverty levels. Let's see. Finally, those living in poorer circumstances could have lower vaccination rates, as our data suggested, for those 50 and older. Most likely, we think all three hypotheses played a role. So there are several limitations to our data. First, not all cases could be geocoded, but with 96% able to be geocoded, we feel the potential for significant bias is minimal. Second, the two flu seasons studied were both H3N2. H1N1 and pandemic seasons could be different, although they weren't in New Haven County, nor in eight counties in Tennessee in a similar multi-season study they recently completed and published. So given this, we have the following conclusion and recommendations. The association between neighborhood poverty and severe influenza incidence appears to be robust and generalizable across the United States. The findings occurred in each site across age and race ethnic groups and more severe influenza outcomes. We feel that these data are sufficient to make the recommendation that enhanced efforts to assure high vaccination rates in higher risk groups should include those residing in poorer neighborhoods. To assure high vaccination rates will require an understanding of barriers to influenza vaccination in those neighborhoods and collaboration among vaccine providers. Finally, pandemic influenza planners, including those developing population-level transition models, need to take this association into account. So I'd just like to thank my co-investigators, particularly Kimberly Yausi-Hines, who did most of the analyses I presented. Thanks. Yeah, so I think we have time for questions, if there are any. Yes?
Well, I'd like to put too fine a point on it, hoping I'm understanding the slides, but you had a slide up that had race ethnicity,
Well, in this case, well, number one is, I think this does show that your socioeconomic status does affect your disease incidence, regardless of race, ethnicity. Then secondly, of course, as you point out, blacks have the highest for each group. For this particular analysis, there are some other diseases in which this kind of analysis actually eliminates racial disparities. I think in this case, census tract poverty doesn't measure all that's going on, that there are other factors. I doubt there are genetic factors. I imagine we're just not measuring all the socioeconomic factors or social determinants that go into determining the differences that we see by poverty, and that there's still residual differences that need to be explained. So this isn't a perfect variable to sort of explain what we see when we look at race by itself, at least for influenza hospitalizations, but it does go part of the way in explaining that.
Dr. Hadwell, coming from Connecticut and knowing the flu vaccination situation in Connecticut 3 years ago and today, not being an expert on social determinants of health, but the availability of flu vaccination in areas is a social determinant of health in a sort of kind of way. And is there enough vaccine available? Is it freely available? Is it low cost or no cost into those neighborhoods, into those census tracts? Who's providing it? Maybe they all don't go to CVS and Walgreens to get their flu shot. Those are kind of intervening variables that float into that mix.
Sure, that's a good point. I think as part of trying to increase vaccination levels in those communities, one needs to go to those communities, understand what the issues are, and then make plans accordingly with those who are there vaccine providers in those neighborhoods, who can then potentially adjust what they're currently doing to make sure that whatever barriers exist are minimized. Yes? Sure, that's a very good point. That's sort of embedded partly in bullet number two, more underlying poorly controlled conditions, for example, asthma, which doesn't say anything about the influenza itself, but things that can make it worse. Yeah. Right. So those are, it's a good point, can be added as either a subset of this or as yet another bullet. Okay, well, thanks.
Thank you, Dr.